The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts. The temple is an affiliate of Boundless Way Zen, a multi-lineage school of Zen Buddhism.
Case 25. From the Gateless Gate, Yangshan's Sermon from the Third Seat. Yangshan dreamed he went to Maitreya's realm and was led to the third seat. A senior monk struck the stand with a gavel and announced, "Today the one in the third seat will preach." Yangshan arose, struck the stand with the gavel, and said, "The truth of the Mahayana is beyond the four propositions and transcends the 100 negations. Listen, listen." Wu Men's comment: "Tell me, did he preach or not? If you open your mouth, you are lost. If you cannot speak, then it seems you are stumped. If you neither open your mouth nor keep it closed, you are 108,000 miles off." Wu Men's verse: "In broad daylight, under the blue sky, he preached a dream in a dream. Absurd, absurd. He deceived the entire assembly." So here we are, together and apart, setting sail on our sesshin together. And this wonderful piece of Dharma has been dropped into the middle of our sitting. This exploration of the Dharma. And it's a really wonderful case in that it raises so much about the Dharma and simultaneously sweeps it away. Yangshan was an early Tang master in the dynasty China, and a cousin of Lin Qi in the Dharma. And in this case, he dreams that he goes to Maitreya's realm. Maitreya is the Buddha of future birth. And there he was led to the third seat, meaning he was very close to the Buddha. We might think of it as a sign of his wisdom. And he was announced as the speaker of the day, teacher of the day, so to speak. And he mounts the stand, bangs the gavel, and essentially dismisses, in a way, some of the deepest teachings of Mahayana Buddhism. He says the truth of the Mahayana is beyond the four propositions and transcends the 100 negations. The four propositions are, in essence, that all things are one, that all things are many things. We might think of that as emptiness in form, that there's no separate self, no separate fixed self. And yet, here you are, and here I am. And the third and fourth are being and non-being. Very related, of course. We might think of these as being over time, that there is something here, but what we are encountering has no permanent essence and does not remain. The 100 negations are made up with the four negatives for each of the propositions. Now that's sounds very complicated. And then it goes on from there. I'll read this little description that comes from Aitken, and then I'll say a little bit about it to make it feel a little human. The 100 negations are made up the four negatives for each of the propositions. Not, not, not. Neither not nor not not, and both not and not not, making 16. Then each of these 16 is found in the past, present, and future, making 48. These that either appeared or have not yet appeared, that makes 96. Negate the original four, and you get the 100 negations. In our tradition, we don't necessarily have a lot of experience with these negations, except in their most clear, simple form in a way. Many of us have heard that when we begin our practice, mountains are mountains, rivers are rivers. As we begin to sense into the emptiness of all phenomena, mountains are no longer mountains, rivers are no longer rivers. We might say that's being and non-being, or the many and the one. But that's not the completion of the journey. We have to go beyond either being or not being, these assertions about the nature of reality or of the nature of the self. I am not. When we think about it, both of these miss the mark a little bit. When we begin our practice, we tend to feel that we do exist. We have this sense of self, and we believe in it. We believe that the sense of self points to something that endures, usually. It's a very common feeling about ourselves, that I am something that endures over time. I am unique. I am separate. So we're invited in our practice to look and see, what is this self? Because we've been taught that the firm belief in ourselves creates suffering, creates a sense of isolation, for one thing. We also can become protective of ourselves. We can become self-centered in our ambitions and longing, thinking of ourselves as our own constant company. As we practice, we begin to see that the formations that constitute the self, none of them have any fixed essence. None of them seem to endure over time. And none of them are separate. So I might have a sense of myself as a good person, and 10 minutes later I make a mistake and I think of myself as a bad person, which is true. We begin to gain the insight that neither is true. I am not a separate being with this enduring, persistent truth. Keeps shape-shifting. We also begin to see that in the sense that we exist in dependence on all other factors. We are the air that we breathe, the water that we drink, the food that we eat. We're always borrowing from the universe. Even our thought formations are words that we did not create. So we realize there's no self. And this is quite an exciting realization to have because we feel liberated. But when we get stuck on no self, this too can be a problem for us. Even when we qualify it, the negation can be so dismissive. It can make us uncompassionate. We might think of the samurai not only to our own suffering, but to others. We might think of the samurai who meets the Zen master and says, I don't suffer anymore. I've seen that there's only emptiness. And he's challenged by the teacher. Oh, you haven't seen anything yet, you loser. And the samurai gets angry. And he pulls his sword out. He's about to kill him. And the master says, where's your no self now? And the samurai bows. There is a side of our practice that goes beyond no self. There's no enduring self, and yet the sense of self arises, doesn't it? And we encounter this again and again in our practice. And so we come back to the realization that mountains are mountains and rivers are rivers, but they are transformed. Our experience with them is not what it once was. But this too isn't a final resting place. Because we can get stuck in all of this philosophy, all of these ideas. Oh, if any of you are tracking this, discussion of Buddhist philosophy, right now you probably have all kinds of thought formations in your mind. Oh, wait, is there self? Okay, I get it. Now I'm supposed to relate with the self as if there's no self. And on and on, the mind starts to spin, the wheels are turning. So we move, neither this nor that, both this and that. And we hold these contradictions all at once, no resting place. Because of course, senses of self emerge. And we don't want to be dismissive of other people's suffering either. People who are born out of relationships that sometimes are determined by factors like race, sex, as we hear in our dedications. These relationships can bring about not just senses of self, but senses of the world that bring about suffering. So we're invited to encounter things just as they are in this very moment, however they may be manifesting, dancing back and forth between these realms, senses of selves arising. We encounter them without attaching to them. We have compassion for them without defending them. The negations help release us from our tendencies to be stuck in any fixed view. Any fixed view that happens to be brought about by the very Dharma that we are exploring. And so this encouragement that practice goes beyond all of this philosophy. These are fingers pointing to the moon. And of course, the fingers are also the moon. But they aren't the whole story. And it's so easy to get lost in the Dharma, in teachings, and in teachers. My teacher embodies the Dharma in some way. Yes and no. No more than you do. No more than any other phenomena in the world. Each of us invited to remain curious and open to every phenomena, to explore its nature. And the more we do, the more it seems that we're invited into a dream within a dream. What is the nature of reality? Where philosophy can get us so caught up in our heads and the spinning of our minds, the moment itself rings clear as a bell. And our practice is to turn toward that ringing again and again and ask, what is this? What is this? With that great heart of compassion, receiving each moment just as it is. Not caught in our ideas about how things are. Something much more intimate. And with that, I'm going to invite Melissa to expand.
So one of the wonderful things that we do at Sesshin is we share Dharma talks. And so now for part two, following this amazing outlay, I would say, laying out of the meaning of this koan from Mike Sensei, I noticed the arising of the self throughout the talk, because I was wondering, when will it be my turn? When will it be my turn? When will it be my turn? And a certain kind of tension arising. It's a very interesting practice. The self does rise up. There's no way to prevent it. And philosophical ideas, as Mike pointed out, are constantly arising. Just hearing all this stuff about the four propositions and the 100 negations, maybe you're just going, yum, yum, I love that kind of stuff. Or maybe you're going, oh man, I don't think I can follow this anymore. One of the things that I particularly love about this koan is that Yangshan is being put on the spot. In it, as Mike explained, he's in the third seat, and there is this whole thing in Zen about where your seat is in the Zendo and how important you are. So the first seat, of course, is where Maitreya Buddha, the most important person in the assembly, is sitting, and then maybe some other Buddha is sitting here in Tushita Heaven, this wonderful magical realm that we can only enter through the dream world, is sitting in the second seat, and there's Yangshan, who at the time this story happened was a student. When he told his teacher about his dream, which is the source of this koan, him telling the story of the dream, apparently his teacher Guishan said to him, oh, now you're really a sage. A little sticky trap for the self, over and over and over again. We can't help it. That's just how we are. Later on, when Yangshan was a teacher himself, he had a beautiful dialogue that mirrors this koan so well that I want to tell you a little bit about it. And Yangshan points to, how do we use all these teachings in our life? This world right now that's so full of suffering. Yesterday, the New York Times had a whole thing about uncertainty with the Omicron variant and the virus and all the things that are going on in the world. It's some of us are getting tired of having to be patient. We keep getting our hopes up and they get dashed. So they recommended in the New York Times that you meditate to learn how to be present with change. And there was a little comment in the comment section from someone with a chronic illness who said, well, I've been living with change my whole life. This is nothing new. And I would say the same is true for all of us. So Yangshan points to the essential point, as Mike did in his talk, and as I'm going to try to do now. Everything that we need to get us through this life is right here. The old Buddha in the story who bangs the gavel and says, now the monk in the third seat will speak. He's just banging a gavel and then adding some words to it, a pointer, as Mike said, like fingers pointing to the moon. And then, of course, Yangshan himself says, it's not all these words, it's not all these concepts. He bangs the gavel and he says, listen. listen. You might say, look, look, smell, taste, touch, feel, be here. Mike, the other day in a talk he gave for the temple, ended our Dharma dialogue by saying something that stuck with me all this time, that people are worried, you know, what's going to happen? The world seems to be falling apart. There's all this political turbulence and racial injustice. There's the pandemic. I don't know what to do. I don't know where to go. And Mike said something like, I'm not going to be able to quote him exactly, in Zen practice, we practice not knowing. We don't know what's going to happen. And so our instruction is to stay present as much as possible with what's happening now, including our endless thoughts about our predictive worries about the future. That's all they are. Doesn't mean that we just sit around and go, oh, well, nothing to do. No, action is also called for. This is also what we do in the present moment. And the little story I came across about Yangshan when he was a teacher himself is that one day one of his students came to him, and it was raining outside, and it was a very light, misty rain, not a big heavy rain. And the student said to Yangshan, isn't the rain lovely today? And Yangshan said to him, what are you talking about? What do you mean when you say it's lovely? And then, of course, the student got all tangled up in knots and started to talk about theory and how some things are lovely and some things are not lovely, but really everything is lovely and nothing is lovely, and on and on and on and on and on. And then finally, Yangshan interrupted him and he said, would you ask me the same question and I will show you another way to answer it? So the student did. He said, what do you mean when you say that the rain is lovely? And Yangshan stepped outside the door and held out his hand, and the rain filled his palm. This is the pointer. Listen, listen. The rap in the dream within a dream that we're all living. This is how we proceed in this very confusing and difficult life of being human. The only way to get through it is to go through it. The only way to be a practitioner of Zen is to practice, to pay attention, and then to act from that perception, to not hide or run away, to not fight reality, because as we often say, when we do that, reality always wins. But to go with, there's racial injustice in the world. What are you going to do about it? How are you going to meet that? There's all kinds of injustice, misogyny. I could go down the list. We've all felt these things. What are you going to do about it in this moment? And there's a pandemic. What are you going to do about it? If you're a scientist, you're going to work on a vaccine. If you're like most of us, you're going to put on a mask and be really extra careful. These are the kinds of activities that we do that are rooted in being awake and present right now. We're celebrating the awakening of our ancestor Shakyamuni Buddha, who is the Buddha of our current age. Maitreya is the Buddha of the next age, many, many millions of years from now. Who knows what world he'll or she or they will find. But we have this world right now. Let the world wake you up. Thank you. And please make yourselves comfortable. Mike and I will do our best to answer any questions or observations you have. It could be about the talk today or about anything that's going on with your practice. And David and Bob will probably not be able to contain themselves, and sometimes they'll come in too. So you'll get the benefit of all four of these beings who have taken on the role of teacher. And you know what to do, raise your Zoom hand. We'll look for raised hands, and maybe I'll call on people, Mike, and we'll kind of take turns. Yeah, so please raise your Zoom hand. Will.
Thank you both very much for the talk. I would like to hear Woman's verse and or comment again. That was the part that really stuck out to me. I don't know which one it was, actually.
I can read them both.
Thank you.
So tell me, did he preach or not? If you open your mouth, you are lost. If you cannot speak, then it seems you are stumped. If you neither open your mouth nor keep it closed, you are 108,000 miles off. Wu Men is so funny, just playing here again with the negations. And then in Wu Men's verse, in broad daylight, under the blue sky, he preached a dream in a dream, absurd, absurd. He deceived the entire assembly.
Yeah, so I guess, as you say, that sort of woman's signature, the negations and so on. And I guess my question is that in some sense, he wants you to feel stuck. At least that's how it sounds to me. Is that seem right?
He certainly does this at the end of all of his verses. Those of you who aren't familiar with him, there's always a little kind of sticking point at the end. But what you're stuck, right, Will?
Yeah, I am.
So that's what Wu Men wants for you. He okay. wants you to fully be where you are. Okay. If you have an insight, that's what Wu Men wants for you. Right? He wants you to enter the reality of your life in this moment. So being stuck's not a problem. Often we think it's a problem and we hate it. And those of you who work on koans know the feeling of not passing a koan doksan after doksan after doksan. And then you start to embroider that with opinions about yourself and opinions about Zen. And it just goes on and on and on and on. You wake up to all that. You see that these are thought patterns. These are emotional patterns, and you get to know them thoroughly, and you still get stuck in them, and then you just keep going. It's a great thing.
That's an answer. Thank you.
Debbie.
Thank you for the talk, both of you. It's beyond me, like self, no self, like that negations a thousand times, whatever. But I guess what I'm trying to do is just watch what I do. So there's a lot of impatience, and there's a lot of sometimes judging myself. Sometimes there's so much going on, but I feel like all the mind is like protecting ourself. So I think that's what's going on, you know, it's like, I can't do this. And so, and then I'm trying to figure out how I can fake do it good, or it's just, there's like so much insanity. And I think the only thing I can do right now is just hold it lightly and kind of watch the show and say, oh yeah, well, that's going on this second. And the next second, there's some other, angle on it. But I think it's all protecting. Like, I think I've got to protect me. I'm not good enough. I got to show them. It's very insane. That's all I'll say.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you. That's like such a full presentation of how the Dharma sometimes appears. And so I just really appreciate that. there can be a feeling of, I guess, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I'll speak for myself. Sometimes just a lack of control of what seems to emerge in our experience of practice. Sometimes that can feel overwhelming and like we just are doing as you are and watching it, bowing down. This is what's arising here and now, and being with it, being intimate with it. I love how this koan for me invites us to multiple, I mean, language, it's all metaphors. So we can say it's empty, it's form, it's one, it's two, it's one and two, it's neither one nor two. You know, these are all the teachings and they do point to kind of lived experiences that we can feel and have and ways of seeing the world. But so can that it's kind of like a dream, right? Maybe that is another way of saying the same thing. Who is dreaming this dream? You know, we just watch all these different images come before our mind as they just seem to emerge out of nowhere, and have this experience of being intimate with them. And, you know, there is something that happens as we continue to practice this, some kind of possibility that it's all okay, that maybe we'd never felt before. That before then it's a problem, but you know, we keep sitting and maybe it's okay that this is what my mind does.
Thank you, Deb. Paul.
Thank you for the koan coming forward, and definitely Mike Sensei and Melissa Roshi, just the way you expanded on it. Yeah, it's your choice of koan and your both of your Dharma talks really reminded me that all these words are really important. You know what you were saying, really, and I really appreciate the pointers again and again, both in the koan and at one point, Mike, you were saying that, and if you like paused, and you said if you're tracking this, you know, like you were, you just went ahead and put that mirror up in front of me and said, "This is your mind, Paul. This is your mind," and of course, that's where I'm going. I'm going with that, and just this aspect of even as the both of you were presenting, that there's both a firmness and a gentleness, I think, in the holding, at least for me, as I hear it. And really reminded me of just during the liturgy service, coming up to go ahead and to make the full prostrations. And I'm at home, and my wife is actually not here, but my dogs are. And it's easier if I open up my meditation space where the dogs can come in and out when she's not here. Otherwise, they tend to bark a little bit extra. And so they came in, and I'm doing my prostrations. And they want to be right there with me. Like they're activated. And I know what to do. I know how to do a prostration. You know, like there's just that the presence. And I really actually appreciate the bowing. And at that time, I'm bowing and I'm petting the dog. And I'm bowing and I'm petting the dog. And in many cases, I think this is what the koan is pointing out, at least to me. Here's this direct line. And then there's, I think, a lightness to it. So I pet the dog. That's what's called for.
So, yeah. How beautifully said. And what a great mental picture you've given us of you doing a full prostration and petting the dog. And, you know, everything really is like this. Hmm. There's our intentionality and what we're going to do. And then there's reality coming in. And how do we embrace the whole? And that's what you just told us about. You just told us a wonderful story about that. And it's always a little challenging because right and wrong come in and the self and other come in and blah, blah, blah. But it's just more like, pet, pet, pet. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chris Amaralt.
Thank you both for the talk and for the liturgy passage, which I've been thinking about. I've been stuck, maybe a little differently than Will, but I've been stuck in being utterly confused lately with all that has been presented to me. And one of the interesting experiences I'm having right now is I'm teaching an undergraduate course on infant development. And last week, I had the great experience of watching a textbook confuse me further as they spent three pages trying to explain what the self was. And what was at first very frustrating was that I felt that I had to explain this. And then I turned to the words, and as several people have mentioned, the self is constructed, the self is built, the self is recognized, the self is named. The more you dig into this textbook of great authority, the further and further you get from the self. And so I'm very heartened by the Hogan Bay's reading. When I'm confused, it's time to choose confusion. It's so stunning to think of that as a choice, as an alternative to being stuck. It's a form of not knowing that I really do not like. And yet it seems like that's the practice that's being offered to me by the planet at the moment. So.
Mm-hmm. I liked Melissa's comment to Will at the end, saying this is exactly where Wu Men hopes you are. And we might say whatever place you are, is exactly the place where the universe wants you to be, exactly the place right here to encounter the truth, the Dharma, right here. Yeah.
When, and it reminds me too of what Reverend Corwin said when he was explaining chanting to us. You know, there is stuff that you want to pay attention to, right? You're teaching a course. There's the textbook. There are the little pictures that show you where to put your hands, and also that's not what's important. There's something bigger here, but that doesn't mean we don't take care of those details as well. It's again like doing the prostration and patting the dog. Yeah. Thank you.
Can I just jump in for a second? Because I can't contain myself. Because you know what we're talking about. You know, if you notice, we all come up with, oh, look at what my mind is doing. You know, for Debbie, it's judging. And Debbie, I'm sure you're the only person on this Zoom call who's got any judging thoughts. You know, and confusion and tracking, right? And what we come back to is that all of these things are the awakened nature. All of these things are Buddha nature. And so even as we say, ha, look what my mind is doing. Yes, exactly. That is the Buddha manifesting himself.
Jesse, is that how you say your name, Jesse? Oh. Yeah.
I have three or two basic questions. They might not be simple, but answer them at the basic level for me. The Buddha was seeking spiritual perfection of sorts, and that is what landed him under this tree. Was he seeking spiritual perfection and couldn't find it, it was driving him crazy? That is my first question. And my second is, who is this Wu Man?
Oh, wonderful questions, yeah. Thank you. And is your name pronounced Jesse? Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, good. Well, I'll handle the, actually, I want to say that he wasn't seeking spiritual perfection, although many people who practice Buddhism think that's what they're doing. He had a real problem with life as it was presented to him, that we grow old, that we get sick, that we die. He really wanted to understand that. So he went seeking all these different spiritual methods of understanding that, and none of them satisfied him. He sat down under that tree in a state of complete dissatisfaction with all the teachings, but still with a little bit of hope that there was some way that he could come to understand what it meant to be human. And when he saw the morning star in the sky, after a night of being tormented by his mind, the fairy tale part of it is that there were demons and beautiful dancing girls coming at him. He was just sitting there by himself, but you know how it is. And that's what happens at Sesshin. Not real dancing girls and demons, but it can feel that way. When he saw the morning star, it was a little bit like Yangshan's banging on the gavel. It was just this, suddenly it cut through everything. It was like when Yangshan held out his hand and the rain filled his palm. It just cut through all of the ideas that he had. And actually there's so many things we could talk about. He didn't want to teach after that. He said, okay, this is great. And depending on the fairy tale you read or the legend you read, some people asked him to teach or the gods asked him to teach, but he ended up getting up and trying to convey this. And this is our inheritance 2,600 years later. And then Wu Men, yes, thank you. And Wu Men was a 13th century Chinese teacher who, so 13th century, this is, you know, what is it, 1,000 years ago now, sort of. And so 1,500 years after the Buddha died, the Buddha taught people, and then they taught people, and they taught people, and they taught people. And so this lineage chant that we did today is our lineage of, you know, my teacher's 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 teacher, going all the way back to the Buddha, actually pre-Buddha, because there's also Prajnaparamita, the spirit of wisdom. But he was a 13th century teacher who gathered together all these stories, this koan is one of them, into a training manual for his students. And we're still using it 1,000 years later, which is pretty cool. And his name is a negation. It means no gate. The word wu in Chinese means no. So there's a lot of this playing around with, as Mike referred to it, with yes and no. Yeah. There it is. Thank you. Thank you for those questions. I bet you're not the only person who didn't know that stuff. So thanks. Bill.
Good morning. Just like to start off and say, woman is winning. Hi. So yeah, I go in and out of these states of confusion, mostly in them. But I wanted to say that what really struck me were those two words, listen, that just sort of, you know, melted my heart a little bit. And then following up that with Yangshan inviting his monk to go outside to catch the rain in his palms. Again, very, very touching that, you know, I do anyways get lost in yes, no, neither, both. And maybe that's really important to be lost, but also to consider all these different aspects of it. But the final thing is to go outside and catch that rain in your palm. That's what Zen means to me.
Mm-hmm. That's lovely, Bill. You do notice that again and again, Wu Men invites us to become entangled, to get lost in the weeds, as do all of the koans. And this is because that's what we do in life. And this is a chance for us to experience the many different forms of ourselves that arise and encounter them. It's also an opportunity to open beyond them. Now, that's not to negate or ignore or dismiss or repress, but to realize that that's not all that there is. There is an invitation in these places where we are deeply lost, of course, to bear witness to that experience. And we aren't only lost. And sometimes we get caught in the story that we're only lost. I'm only confused. I'm only this or only that. You know, we're neither this nor that, too. There's this invitation to bear witness to whatever we are, but not limit ourselves with these little stories. And so we reach our hand out the door and feel the rain.
And I also think that being lost is a prerequisite. As long as you're not lost, you're in real trouble. Right? Because the mind has its certainty and it thinks, well, I really know what's going on. And until we realize we don't, that all of our thinking, all of our trying, none of it can penetrate. And only when we see we are lost, is there some option to stick the hand out genuinely, not to confirm, oh, I thought it was raining. Yeah, it's just raining. What's, you know, but to stick the hand out, to enter our life and actually feel the wetness, to feel the breeze on our cheek, the aching in our heart, whatever it is. So quit bragging.
Thanks, Bill. And our last comment from Brad.
Well, just, I guess, it's a water image. I feel like when I'm listening to a koan, I'm trying to keep my head above water. Waves keep coming until I'm finally, you know, in the bamboozled state that I joined the rest of the monks in the story. And I guess it's my duty to try to keep my head above water, but also to accept that I'm lost. Those are two things at once. Like, I can't just join the bamboozled and say, you know, I'll come into Dokusan with stupid answers for the next 5 years. You know, I'm gonna see if I can solve the riddle. But, you know, with the other hand says, get ready for the 5 years of not solving it or whatever.
Both. And I think 5 years is probably too short a time. 10, 20 maybe. Yeah. Right. And so, you know, it does go back to this whole idea of what's going to happen to the world. You know, we both have to face into things are really screwed up, mm-hmm. and let that guide us. And also, no, right now, you know, the cool breeze is blowing the trees outside the window. Those two things coexist. And this is where, you know, even though we've been putting the four propositions down a little bit, they're not that useless as a frame for what we do constantly with our minds. Another way of framing them is the first one is yes, the second one is no, the third one is both yes and no. And that's what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And the fourth one is neither yes nor no. So, you know, and then on and on. But that helps me because sometimes my mind is going, yes, yes, I'm here. And sometimes my mind is going, no, no, it's not this. None of this is real. This is a dream. And mm-hmm. then you're describing that the third proposition, mm-hmm. which is sometimes it's both. And then, of course, sometimes it's neither. And the mind just keeps flowing through. And partly what we're doing in Zen, not just trying to wake up to reality, but part of the reality we're waking up to is this incessant flow of thoughts and feelings and sensations, of movement, that the world keeps turning, that things are happening. The moon rises and sets, the sun rises and sets. All these things, we're getting older. All these things are happening. And if you try to hold on and say, I just want it to stop and slow down so I can figure it out.
Yeah.
Right? Exactly what you're pointing to. Yeah. Thank you. Anybody, any of the other teachers want to say a last word before we end? Okay.
No.
Yes.
Well, I do and I don't.
I'm done. All right. Thank you all so much. And we'll come back into our posture for meditation just for a few breaths.